Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and I'm here with the one and only Jeff Beal, who wrote the awesome score for House of Cards that we all know and love, those first few notes that we know the show already. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jason. Great to be on your show, man.
Yep. Now, the reason we're talking with him, the NSO Pops is doing something awesome at the Kennedy Center on Thursday, July 14th, House of Cards in concert. I believe this is the first time this has ever been done, right?
Yeah, this is the world premiere, and I was so excited when, you know, we heard that the National Symphony wanted to do it, because of course, you know, there is no better place to premiere this concert with a video and all this stuff, right in the heart of Washington D.C. and with the National Symphony Orchestra and at the Kennedy Center. It just feels like we are completely breaking all of the fourth walls in the music world too. So we're just thrilled, and they're a wonderful orchestra, as you know, and the opportunity to hear, you know, people obviously that know the show know the music very well, but there's nothing like hearing it played by a live symphony orchestra. In fact, one of the things I've done is take a lot of the music from the show and actually expanded it, so it really is written for the full orchestra, so you really get to hear the orchestra play.
Awesome. Yeah, D.C.'s the perfect place for you guys to come do this. Obviously, we're featured in the credits, but I also remember I was there at the museum. They premiered the show itself, the very first season, and Spacey was there, Robin Wright was there, Kate Mara was there, everyone was there, and, you know, it's like you guys are coming home again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful because, you know, I had the great pleasure last year of meeting the creator of the original show from the UK, Michael Dobbs is his name, and he's actually a member of the House of Lords in London. So this show has its roots from the very beginnings in the world of politics, not only in story, but also in the people that created it.
Yeah.
It's just really, really cool to be doing it in Washington, D.C. I remember when we first premiered it, I read some stories that a lot of people sort of in the Beltway were really fans of the show. And like, of course, this isn't my world, but to them, the show does a good job of describing what Washington really feels like, what the sort of really inner workings of the town are like. So that's obviously we're much more heightened and stylized than that, but it's a cool connection.
Yeah, take me into when you first came up with the idea. It's weird to think there was a time that theme didn't exist. It's all in our heads now. But take me back to, you know, where you were and how you came up with that sound.
Yeah, and that's fun, and that's also so, you know, something I'm really excited about the concert. A lot of what I'll be doing in the concert is sort of talking about my process and where some of this music came from and the inspirations, and sort of give you a peek inside behind the scenes. The interesting thing about the theme is that it was actually written before David Fincher shot a reel of film on the show. I actually had a meeting with David about the show. I'd read about four scripts from the creator, Bo Willimon, and we talked about concepts and musical inspirations. And after that meeting, I got a call that David wanted to hear some sketches, you know, before he started shooting. And I thought, perfect opportunity to sort of follow up on that and try some things. So I wrote about four initial sketches, and I didn't really know what was going to be. I had a feeling that might be the one, but that, you know, that sketch, initial sketch, was something that I wrote away from picture, and then of course it got expanded on later. And the whole idea behind it was really, I remember David said, we need a call to arms, and so it's there's a certain heroic, dark heroic quality to it. But obviously, we talked about the gritty sort of carnivorous nature of this guy Frank Underwood and this sort of creature of politics, and so, you know, that bass line was something that I just started with. Oh, that feels kind of, you know, kind of visceral and predatory. Mm-hmm. And so really the whole thing comes from that very simple bass line and then that series of chords that goes over it. I find often in film music, the simplest ideas can be the most effective if you find a good one, you know. And a lot of what I like to do in film music is to try to find some very simple building blocks that somehow in their combination creates a real interesting musical palette.
Yeah, talk about how the, you know, sort of the graphic sequence that they, you know, the shots they pick of Nats Park and even like a waste barrel by the river and yet shadows creeping across this historic. I mean, it's very symbolic. Talk about how that pairs so well with the score.
I love that, and I love that you mentioned the barrel, because one thing that's so cool about the title sequences is you have these beautiful iconic shots of Washington, And then, but you also have these incredibly prosaic images, like the barrel on the river there.
It's brilliant. Was that Fincher?
That was, you know, I'm assuming that's all David and you know, and his editor Kurt Baxter. And right. There was a second unit that had to set up this time lapse stuff because it's very tricky to move a camera dolly and make things move, and it's very intricate. In fact, one of the coolest things they did at the very end, and I'll talk about the trumpet in a second too, because that was one of the last things I put in, believe it or not. Because I'm a trumpet player, but it felt like the most obvious thing. But one of the cool things he did visually at the end was some of the daytime shots. He actually had people go through frame by frame and paint out all the people.
Oh wow!
And that was so cool because you know, of course, it just really it feels even more ghostly. So I guess what one of the things that the main title sequence does, it shows us all of those popular iconic things that we've seen. But it somehow shows them in a different way and couches them. This is what film does. You know, we take something and you make a statement about it by the way you photograph it, by the music that you put on it.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a template for what became the whole score to the show. I mean, aside from the main title, which everybody knows, I love composing the score for each episode, which I've now done for 4 seasons, getting ready to do a 5th. And, you know, in every episode we have about 30 minutes of original music. And every year I've released, you know, a double CD of music just because there's that much new material created. So really, you know, not on, in television and film, you know, I definitely feel like we're sort of at, this is somebody calling it peak television, which it might be, it's pretty crazy, but it's certainly a golden age of the small screen. And just following suit with the quality, when you look at the acting talent, the writing talent, the directing talent that has decided that this is a really cool place to be, the opportunity for composers is enormous in this world. So I feel really lucky and fortunate to be working on such a great show and a show that really sort of begs and invites you to really write a very expansive a score. You know, one of my favorite. I don't want to give away what we're going to do in the concert, but people that know the series well will get to see, you know, in film, you know, some very iconic scenes from the series with the orchestra playing the score.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and you know, there's also other ones where I've sort of choreographed montages from the show that really go along with the music. So it's not like some of these concerts where we're just showing the film with the orchestra. It's a little more of a curated experience. And right. Part of the reason I did that was also how do you distill, you know, what over 50 hours of TV into an evening. But also I wanted it to be the kind of concert where people that know the show and know the music will be able to have an experience they can't have at home. Just watching it, and also for people that have never seen House of Cards, which I'm sure there's some of those, can come. But it's not just full of plot spoilers. Obviously, there's a few things you're going to learn.
Are you going to see anything from the most recent season? Will that be spoiled?
Yes, okay. I've actually. There's a few, not a lot of big. You know, I'm trying to avoid really big dramatic spoilers. Right. You know what the big spoiler is in season 4, for example, and I'm hinting at it, but I'm not showing that.
Right.
There'll be shots, but not certain shots. Yeah. You know, and you'll see various things. Like one of the shots I have is a wonderful shot of Kevin, you know, struggling to walk, for example, you know. So we know what that means.
But in season 2, by the way, you don't know this, but you're Skyping. Our radio station is literally where the fictional Cathedral Heights Metro is, where the big season 2 twist happens. You're Skyping where that subway.
That is so exciting. And that scene, that wonderful scene, you know, this is a great story because I'm so glad you're mentioning this because I'm pretty sure the very first shot that David did, which is an amazing shot, and this will be shown in the concert. There's a great scene between Frank and Zoe. I think it's in the second episode of the first season in the subway tunnel when they have this wonderful conversation.
A great scene.
And it's great for people that know the series. It's also sort of a harbinger of something. It's a little bit of foreshadowing about what might happen later. And I didn't even know that when I was doing it because I didn't know what was going to happen to Zoe. That's part of it. I don't like knowing a lot about what's going to happen, although I do need to know, but I try to forget when I'm writing because I want to experience it in the audience. But it's so amazingly timed the way the train comes in. I don't know if that was an accident or whatever, but it's almost as if you couldn't plan the train to show up at a better part in the conversation Kevin and Kate Mara are having at that station. And it's just such a great image. You know, another funny story, I just did a whole TED talk that's going to be up soon, And one of the things that was really struck me by surprise, you mentioned the oil can, but a lot of other people, there's a chord that plays when the train goes under a bridge in the main title. For some people, that's like their favorite part of it. And so it just cracks me up because I never planned it. I mean, the way the music lined up with the train was kind of an accident. But it's also, I also learned something from that. And it's the way in which an audience engages and sort of, you know, you're part of the storytelling experience, especially when you have music and film at the same time. You know, our brains creatively do this really cool thing where we sort of create a narrative. We fill it in, even if there isn't one there, we create it. And it's one of the things I love about being a film composer, because a lot of what we do at film composers is sort of exist in that nonverbal world of the imagination and emotions, where the music can sometimes tell you things that you don't see. You know, a lot of what makes House of Cards so cool is all these agendas and these political things, but we can't really show that. It's hard to show, you know, a conspiracy, but you can feel a conspiracy. And I know that David was influenced and sort of pays homage to one of my favorite movies about Washington, and a real classic film, All the President's Men, you know, just in terms of tone and the way that felt, you know, sort of, you know, there's definitely that sort of brooding operatic and almost film noir quality sometimes sort of percolating through the show, which I just love. Being a trumpet player and a jazz trumpet player too, which is my instrument.
Definitely, yeah. Now, speaking of the classic movies, do you have any composers that sort of inspired you when you were coming up? And, you know, the Bernard Herrmanns or the Morricones or anyone?
Yeah, there's, you know, Morricone. There's two people at the top of that question for me. One is Ennio Morricone, and Bernard Herrmann, of course. But the other one that really comes to mind that I always mention is Jerry Goldsmith, and I'll tell you why.
Oh my God, he's so good. You
know, he's so good. He was also a great, really, really a jazz composer. I mean, you listen to scores like Chinatown and L.A. Confidential.
Chinatown, such a great score.
Oh, and he had this wonderful sense of sophistication in his music, and so he's, you know, the thing I love about him and Ennio, and of course John Williams, and some more modern composers that are wonderful, like, you know, Alexander Desplat and Mark Isham and Thomas Newman. Is that, you know, I tend to gravitate towards the composers that I feel create a unique sound for every show they do, and all those guys do that, and that's what I love to do. But the jazz thing is really fun, because this is something that David and I did not talk about really in our first meeting, but something I felt obliged to explore, which really relates to Jerry Goldsmith, was this whole idea of film noir, you know, and reading the first four scripts of this relationship of Frank and Claire Underwood, and what a strange but sophisticated world it was. I thought, man, this really needs some PG-13 chords and music. So one of the very first sketches I wrote, which we'll also be doing at the concert and showing some of the scene, is this sort of film noir, slow 3-4 theme that people from the show will immediately recognize. You first hear it in the pilot when Frank comes home and has this sort of long night of the soul when he smokes a cigarette and decides what he's going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sort of the beginnings of their sort of evil, plotting, romantic, sexy music. And that was something I just tried on an instinct, and David loved it, and he ended up putting that theme in that scene, and it's stuck with us forever since, and it's become a big part of our sound. And one of the things I love about the show, the way it's written, you know, our creator Bo Willimon, actually, you know, he does a lot of things. He's a playwright, he's a graphic artist, he's a just brilliant guy. But he also worked in politics. He was a staffer, I believe, in Washington, so he has an experience in politics, and his writing is so descriptive, but there's a sophistication in his writing which I really love. I often tell people that I feel like people talk in House of Cards like I'm old enough to remember, like when movie dialogue was written like that, which I just loved. It's sort of a lot of double entendre, sophisticated use of language.
Back to noir. I wish it would get back to that in some scripts.
I know, I know. Well, I think we are. Here we are. I
mean, yeah, it's true. That's true.
We do, you know. Our smoking scenes, you know, stand in for those. That's one of our sex scenes, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's the whole idea of what you imply is as powerful as what you show.
Which I think it's more powerful. Totally,
which is against naturalism, which noir was all about. Noir was all about style and atmosphere.
Here we go. You hear it? Oh, baby.
Yeah, you know.
Hold on, where's the good part? There we go. Yeah. Man, Goldsmith.
You know, right? You know? I mean, you know. That's a party right there.
But do you sort of view, you know, your House of Cards theme, and then, I mean, to even be spoken in the same breath as Jerry Goldsmith's Chinatown? Oh. But they relate. I mean, they're both corruption. One's the water and power corruption of L.A.
Well, exactly.
And this is
actually really good. That's a really good point, and I hadn't thought of that before. But yeah, very similar stories in the sense that they have a political dimension to them, but they're really about the dark underbelly of what really happens. So, you know, I would never put myself in the same sentence with Jerry. He's just one of my heroes. But here's the interesting thing, and this is the thing I'm so thrilled about this concert is, you know, if I would have told you, you know, 5 years ago that the music I'm definitely best known for anywhere around the world is music I wrote for a television show that isn't even on broadcast, it's on the internet, you know, Jason, I would have told you you're out of your mind, right? You know?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And
this was the first one, right?
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, you know, even before we booked this premiere with the National Symphony, our first booking came in even before we had the show ready, was in Amsterdam. And there's a huge following for the show. I mean, I've been all over the world now. I conducted in Poland last summer at a festival for 12,000 fans. And the point I'm getting to is that, you know, one of the things that's so wonderful about television is there's a familiarity in it that an audience that loves the show gets with the show, with the world. And yes, you are incredibly, you definitely sort of will have won the lottery if you get to write a main title for a show like that, because really it's a piece that gets heard over and over, it gets remembered, and it sort of burns into people's brains, you know. Mm-hmm. One of the things I explored doing this TED Talk, which was really fascinating to me, because I'm really into neuroscience, I'm just sort of a science geek in general, you know. And one of the cool things, that moment we were just having with the Chinatown thing, is music has this amazing ability. It actually speaks to a lot of areas of the brain, but it also speaks very prominently to the memory centers of the brain.
Right.
So hearing, this is why hearing a piece of music that you know and you have a memory with is a really powerful experience. And it conjures up, you know, all sorts of feelings and emotions, you know, you had seeing the film and whatever, you know. So this idea of celebrating film music in the concert hall, I really think it's an idea whose time has come, you know. I think, you know, this is a really amazing time. I'm sure if you've been, I don't know how much of this has happened in D.C., but, you know, if you look around at the world of the symphony orchestra, this whole idea of bringing music from the screen into the concert hall is just sort of exploding right now. I mean, it's kind of just going,
definitely.
I mean, from the New York Philharmonic on down, I mean, the New York Philharmonic has basically given a week of their whole season over to film music. I think this is just a fantastic trend because, listen, the composers of today are working in all sorts of media, but a lot of the working composers and a lot of the really wonderful music being written right now is being written for films and video games and TV shows, and the idea that we can sort of pick some of the best of that and when it's deserving and bring it into the concert hall is, I think, just a wonderful trend. And it also keeps the literature alive, you know. It makes symphony orchestra music relevant to a modern day audience. You know, sometimes we think of these traditions like the symphony orchestra as an old sort of dying tradition, but, you know, every day in Hollywood and all over the world, these traditions are being practiced. You know, these are still the tools we're using to create music for our television shows and our movies and everything else, you know.
Yeah, and I mean the NSO, I mean they've been doing a lot of this lately. We've interviewed conductors like Emile Decoux and Stephen Reinecke. But they did the Kennedy Center, just I guess it was over the holidays, they showed John Williams' score with Home Alone. They screened that at the Kennedy Center. Wolf Trap, which is down the street, did Back to the Future, and Alan Silvestri was there. I think they're doing Raiders of the Lost Ark this summer. But like, yeah, it's something where people can go see. Maybe they've seen the movie, or in this case, House of Cards show. They've seen it a bunch, but to be able to go see it in a different way with a live orchestra, and it's a
exactly.
night out, and it's an event setting, and it's awesome. You know, explain why it's going to be awesome for our listeners to come see it live.
All of what you said, and also, you know, we're not ready to announce all the names, but we have several people coming from the show and from behind the scenes. We're actually going to have a panel afterwards and have a little talk with some of the creators and some of the talent in the show, which will be really fun. I'll also probably be introducing some of those people as we go through. One of the names which I can share with you, because he's definitely coming and he's such a fan of the show, is really Michael Dobbs. He's probably coming the furthest, but Michael Dobbs has told me he's going to come from London, which I'm so thrilled. I met him last year at our London premiere, and he's just a fascinating person to be part of our panel because he created the original UK version, but also he is still a member of the House of Lords. In fact, I had the opportunity to visit the House of Lords when I was there. I was actually visiting someone else. I had my publisher, and this is a really surreal story because I can't imagine going to Washington just having, hey, I know a senator. Do you want to come visit the Senate with me? This doesn't seem to happen, but right. This actually happened in London, and my publisher knew another member of the House of Lords, Lord Stone. So I said, hey, Michael, I'm going to be over at the House of Lords tomorrow because I got his card. He gave me his email address. I said, great. Well, we're going to be having tea with Lord Stone. So Michael Dobbs came over and said hello to our table. And it was just like, it was surreal, Jason, I'm telling you. But he's a wonderful guy. He's so happy about not only this, he's happy at what all the things his creativity has spawned. And he has a really great story to tell about the way he first created the book, which became the UK version of our show. And I don't know if you know, some people have watched it. It's on Netflix as well. But I think that's a really fun sort of compare and contrast, not only between the British version of the show and the American, but also just in terms of the whole political world. It's just sort of a fascinating juxtaposition there. So I'm really thrilled he's going to be there. And the other thing that I'll mention, too, is, I'm a jazz trumpet player. So I'm really, aside from conducting the orchestra, you know, we heard that Chinatown excerpt, you know, I'm going to be playing trumpet on a few of the cues, taking a few solos, awesome. Which will be really fun. And one other sort of special bonus, which is fun to announce, you know, this score is sort of a family affair. You know, I come from, my family is sort of the Von Trapps. My son is an amazing jazz and electric bass player, and he's going to be the electric bass player for all these concerts. He's in college now, and we're bringing him out on the road with us. And it's really important because, you know, that's such an important part of the music. He played on the original music for me. That's him playing bass on the theme. But also it's a really important part in terms of just keeping the orchestra together. You really need good rhythm, you know. So yeah. I'm really excited he'll be joining us. And also my wife, Joan, who's a wonderful opera singer. I don't know if you ever noticed the opera voice in the show. But we use it occasionally for Claire Underwood. And it's in the main, you know, and sort of it's just a color, but it's very cool. And so Joan will be joining me in the second half, sort of doing this, what the fans call her on Twitter, spooky opera singer. But it's really fun because it's just sort of like, you know, it was something that I added to the score starting in the second season, and we've sort of gone to a few times. And that, you know, I love the idea of associating instruments sometimes with a character. And for Frank, you know, we had the bass and we had the trumpet. We had these sort of real, and I felt like I needed something really powerful and authoritative for Claire's character, especially as she sort of gains power and authority. As
rising
she,
the as ranks.
Progress. So I thought, well, there's nothing more sort of, you know, cool than a dramatic operatic soprano screaming at the top of her lungs. You know, that just sort of says, I'm here, you know. So that's going to be fun. And so, yeah, you know, they'll be performing with me. And also the orchestra will really be featured. You know, I guess the other thing that will make this concert special, aside from the video and the special guests, will also be the fact that it's not just, I just sort of didn't grab the music off the stand from the show and send it to the National Symphony. I've really gone through and taken all these themes and really sort of expanded them for full symphony orchestra. So you know, I hate wasting resources. So, you know, when I had the opportunity to go out and work with a full symphony orchestra, you know, that's such an amazing thing in terms of the sounds you can get. So I'm really happy that we'll really be featuring the orchestra. So people, I guess what I'm trying to say is people that know the music from the show, yeah, you'll get to hear it, but you'll also get to hear it in a more sort of, you know, going to 11 in Spinal Tap terms way.
you just did Spinal Tap and Von Trapps in the same sentence. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
How do you solve a problem like the Beale family? That's awesome. That's so awesome. It's a family affair. See?
I like the lyric. That's good. Can I use that? That's a good one.
You steal it. You don't even need to give me credit.
Yeah, my joke. I saw on your Twitter feed that you were excited about Curb Your Enthusiasm coming back, and you know Larry David is sort of my comedic hero. So you know,
well, look, you did your research. You're like, hey, I'm gonna peep him on Twitter real quick and see. Well, today's piece is Brian De Palma, and that gets a little more creepy, like House of Cards.
Ooh, so yeah, I love him.
You got to see that. You got to see that doc. It was a great. It's a documentary called De Palma.
Oh, I want to see that. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's,
oh, the docs. Docs are amazing. You know, I did Blackfish a few years ago, and
yeah, that's amazing. You've done a lot of great work, man.
Well, I just was gonna say that, you know, documentaries are amazing. It's amazing the quality of filmmaking that's happening in the doc world right now. I will definitely check out that Brian De Palma one.
Well, Blackfish is probably one of the better ones that has been done in recent years, and congrats on winning the. I guess you just won an Emmy too for House of Cards too, right?
I did, and sort of another fun sort of. fourth wall coincidence is actually that the July 14th just happens to be the day of the Emmy announced. The nominations are announced on the July 14th, which is the day of our concert. So
perfect.
I'm hoping some of the people that are, I'll be able to congratulate some of the people that come to our concert with some Emmy love. That would be fun if that happens.
Yeah, and you'll, at the very least, you'll also be able to say this, you know, tonight's the 1 year anniversary of when I, you know, got nominated last year.
I know. Listen, it's totally icing on the cake, but it's you know, especially I am very honored by that, and I'm honored for the show too, because when you look at how many shows now are competing for these awards, it's really enormous. In fact, there's been talk about you know, sort of expanding the number of nominees in the best show category, kind of like the Motion Picture Academy has done. And when you look at all the great television, it might be time for that idea, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for taking this little crazy concept of a little internet show and blowing the door open for all of us.
Thank you.
Those trumpets, in a way, sort of blew that door open. So
there you go. Yeah, I who knew? You know, it's just look, it's great.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, thanks for your time. This was a nice little half-hour chat. We'll let you run, but thanks so much, and we're looking forward to seeing you on July 14th. This will be awesome.
Thank you so much, Jason. We'll see you next month.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, sir.
Thank you so much.